11. Temple waked, lying in a tight ball, with narrow bars of sunlight falling across her face like the tines of a golden fork. And while the stiffened blood trickled and tingled through her cramped muscles, she lay gazing quietly up at the ceiling. Like the walls, it was of rough planks, crudely laid, each plank separated from the next by a thin line of blackness. In the corner, a square opening above a ladder gave into a gloomy loft, shot with thin pencils of sun also. From nails in the walls, broken bits of desiccated harness hung, and she lay plucking tentatively at the substance in which she lay. She gathered a handful of it and lifted her head, and saw within her fallen coat naked flesh between brassiere and knickers and knickers and stockings. Then she remembered the rat, and scrambled up and sprang to the door, clawing at it, still clutching the fist full of cottonseed hulls, her face puffed with the hard slumber of 17. She had expected the door to be locked, and for a time she could not pull it open, her numb hands scoring at the undressed planks until she could hear her fingernails. It swung back, and she sprang out. At once she sprang back into the crib and banged the door to. The blind man was coming down the slope at a scuffling trot, tapping a head with a stick, the other hand at his waist, clutching a wad of his trousers. He passed the crib with his braces dangling about his hips, his gymnasium shoes scuffing in the dry chaff of the hallway, and passed from view, the stick rattling lightly along the rank of empty stalls. Temple crouched against the door, clutching her coat about her. She could hear him back there in one of the stalls. She opened the door and peered out, at the house in the bright May sunshine, the Sabbath peace. And she thought about the girls and men leaving the dormitories in their new spring clothes, strolling along the shaded streets toward the cool, unhurried sound of bells. She lifted her foot and examined the soiled sole of her stocking, brushing at it with her palm, then at the other one. The blind man's stick clattered again. She jerked her head back and closed the door to a crack and watched him pass, slower now, hunching his braces onto his shoulders. He mounted the slope and entered the house. Then she opened the door and stepped gingerly down. She walked swiftly to the house, her stockinged feet flinching and cringing from the rough earth, watching the house. She mounted to the porch and entered the kitchen and stopped, listening into the silence. The stove was cold. Upon it the blackened coffee pot sat, and a soiled skillet. Upon the table soiled dishes were piled at random.
"I haven't eaten since. Yesterday was one day," she thought, "but I didn't eat then. I haven't eaten since. And that night was the dance, and I didn't eat any supper. I haven't eaten since dinner Friday," she thought. "And now it's Sunday."
Thinking about the bells in cool steeples against the blue, and pigeons crooning about the belfries like echoes of the organ's bass. She returned to the door and peered out. Then she emerged, clutching the coat about her. She entered the house and sped up the hall. The sun lay now on the front porch, and she ran with a craning motion of her head, watching the patch of sun framed in the door. It was empty. She reached the door to the right of the entrance and opened it and sprang into the room and shut the door and leaned her back against it. The bed was empty. A faded patchwork quilt was wadded across it. A khaki-covered canteen and one slipper lay on the bed. On the floor, her dress and hat lay. She picked up the dress and hat and tried to brush them with her hand and with the corner of her coat. Then she sought the other slipper, moving the quilt, stooping to look under the bed. At last she found it in the fireplace, in a litter of wood ashes between an iron fire dog and an overturned stack of bricks, lying on its side, half full of ashes, as though it had been flung or kicked there. She emptied it and wiped it on her coat and laid it on the bed, and took the canteen and hung it on a nail in the wall. It bore the letters U.S. and a blurred number in black stencil. Then she removed the coat and dressed. Long-legged, thin-armed, with high, small buttocks, a small, childish figure, no longer quite a child, not yet quite a woman, she moved swiftly, smoothing her stockings and writhing into her scant, narrow dress. "Now I can stand anything," she thought quietly, with a kind of dull, spent astonishment. "I can stand just anything." From the top of one stocking, she removed a watch on a broken black ribbon. 9 o'clock. With her fingers, she combed her matted curls, combing out 3 or 4 cottonseed hulls. She took up the coat and hat and listened again at the door. She returned to the back porch. In the basin was a residue of dirty water. She rinsed it and filled it and bathed her face. A soiled towel hung from a nail. She used it gingerly. Then she took a compact from her coat and was using it when she found the woman watching her in the kitchen door. "Good morning," Temple said. The woman held the child on her hip. It was asleep.
"Hello, baby," Temple said, stooping. "You won't sleep all day? Look at Temple."
They entered the kitchen. The woman poured coffee into a cup. "It's cold, I expect," she said, "unless you want to make up the fire." From the oven, she took a pan of bread.
"No,"
Temple said, sipping the lukewarm coffee, feeling her insides move in small, trickling clots like loose shot.
"I'm not hungry. I haven't eaten in 2 days, but I'm not hungry. Isn't that funny? I haven't eaten in..."
She looked at the woman's back with a fixed, placative grimace.
"You haven't got a bathroom, have you?"
"What?" the woman said. She looked at Temple across her shoulder, while Temple stared at her with that grimace of cringing and placative assurance. From a shelf, the woman took a mail-order catalog and tore out a few leaves and handed them to Temple. "You'll have to go to the barn like we do."
"Will I?" Temple said, holding the paper. "The barn?"
"They're all gone," the woman said. "They won't be back this morning."
"Yes," Temple said. "The barn."
"Yes, the barn," the woman said, "unless you're too pure to have to."
"Yes," Temple said.
She looked out the door across the weed-choked clearing. Between the somber spacing of the cedars, the orchard lay bright in the sunlight. She donned the coat and hat and went toward the barn, the torn leaves in her hand, splotched over with small cuts of clothespins and patent wringers and washing powder, and entered the hallway. She stopped, folding and folding the sheets. Then she went on, with swift, cringing glances at the empty stalls. She walked right through the barn. It was open at the back, upon a mass of jimson weed in savage white and lavender bloom. She walked on into the sunlight again, into the weeds. Then she began to run, snatching her feet up, almost before they touched the earth, the weeds slashing at her with huge, moist, malodorous blossoms. She stooped and twisted through a fence of sagging, rusty wire and ran downhill among trees. At the bottom of the hill, a narrow scar of sand divided the two slopes of a small valley, winding in a series of dazzling splotches where the sun found it. Temple stood in the sand, listening to the birds among the sun-shot leaves, listening, looking about. She followed the dry runlet to where a jutting shoulder formed a nook matted with briars. Among the new green, last year's dead leaves from the branches overhead clung, not yet fallen to earth. She stood here for a while, folding and folding the sheets in her fingers, in a kind of despair. When she rose, she saw, upon the glittering mass of leaves along the crest of the ditch, the squatting outline of a man. For an instant, she stood and watched herself run out of her body, out of one slipper. She watched her legs twinkle against the sand through the flecks of sunlight for several yards, then whirl and run back and snatch up the slipper and whirl and run again. When she caught a glimpse of the house, she was opposite the front porch. The blind man sat in a chair, his face lifted into the sun. At the edge of the woods, she stopped and put on the slipper. She crossed the ruined lawn and sprang onto the porch and ran down the hall. When she reached the back porch, she saw a man in the door of the barn, looking toward the house. She crossed the porch in two strides and entered the kitchen, where the woman sat at the table smoking, the child on her lap.
"He was watching me," Temple said. "He was watching me all the time."
She leaned beside the door, peering out. Then she came to the woman, her face small and pale, her eyes like holes burned with a cigar, and laid her hand on the cold stove.
"Who was?" the woman said. "Yes," Temple said. "He was there in the bushes, watching me all the time."
She looked toward the door, then back at the woman, and saw her hand lying on the stove. She snatched it up with a wailing shriek, clapping it against her mouth, and turned and ran toward the door. The woman caught her arm, still carrying the child on the other, and Temple sprang back into the kitchen. Goodwin was coming toward the house. He looked once at them and went on into the hall. Temple began to struggle.
"Let go," she whispered. "Let go, let go."
She surged and plunged, grinding the woman's hand against the door jamb until she was free. She sprang from the porch and ran toward the barn and into the hallway and climbed the ladder and scrambled through the trap and to her feet again, running toward the pile of rotting hay. Then suddenly she ran upside down in a rushing interval. She could see her legs still running in space, and she struck lightly and solidly on her back and lay still, staring up at an oblong yawn that closed with a clattering vibration of loose planks. Faint dust sifted down across the bars of sunlight. Her hand moved in the substance in which she lay. Then she remembered the rat a second time. Her whole body surged in an involuted spurning movement that brought her to her feet in the loose hulls, so that she flung her hands out and caught herself upright, a hand on either angle of the corner, her face not 12 inches from the crossbeam on which the rat crouched. For an instant they stared eye to eye. Then its eyes glowed suddenly like two tiny electric bulbs, and it leaped at her head just as she sprang backward, treading again on something that rolled under her foot. She fell toward the opposite corner, on her face in the hulls and a few scattered corn cobs gnawed bone clean. Something thudded against the wall and struck her head in ricochet. The rat was in that corner now, on the floor. Again their faces were not 12 inches apart, the rat's eyes glowing and fading as though worked by lungs. Then it stood erect, its back to the corner, its forepaws curled against its chest, and began to squeak at her in tiny, plaintive gasps. She backed away on hands and knees, watching it. Then she got to her feet and sprang at the door, hammering at it, watching the rat over her shoulder, her body arched against the door, rasping at the planks with her bare hands.